My name is Jackie Brolsman. I'm one of the teaching staff coordinators here for the month of June. And I want to welcome folks tonight. We've been told through titles on books and a phrase that's been used a lot in the last couple of years by people in various domains that we're told that it takes a village to raise a child. And we want to ask the question tonight of really who is the village and how is that village doing? We have a really unique opportunity to have the wisdom, experience, and opinions of these folks here who will introduce themselves and share a little bit about their own perspective. And then we'll open it up. And as many of you know, if you attended a forum before at Holden, we like to have this opportunity to be one to have healthy debate and conversation and have people have lots of freedom to share their opinions. This is a place where you can kind of take risks and even present an opposing point of view and make it interesting. You can also pose questions to the folks up here, and we're going to try to end promptly in 1 hour, and maybe sooner if we all decide that we've already decided everything. So I'm going to ask the people to introduce themselves. The idea for tonight's forum actually came out of our meeting together for the first time on Saturday when we were talking about that phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, and Rosita was able to tell us that phrase comes from her native land and that there's actually more to the phrase. So why don't we start with you, Rosita, and then we'll continue.
Once again, my name is the Reverend Sister Rosina Amper from the Order of St. Helena, Episcopal Religious Community. I'm a Ghanaian by nationality, but I always say that I belong to wherever God's people are. So now that I'm here, I'm here. But I want to introduce this topic by introducing a little bit of my culture tonight into this. When I first heard, 2 years ago, was it when the book came out, Mrs. Clinton's book, my reaction to it was, it's not complete. This is half of the statement that needs to get out there. And it was a surprising idea to me that it's just now that somebody is putting out this book. I thought where I grew up is the same everywhere, and I was proved wrong. But the quotation actually is, when the child is in the stomach, it belongs to the parents. But when the child is born, it belongs to the village, the town, and finally, the nation and the world. And so it takes the whole village to raise the child. That's half of what was put on the book. So the first part didn't come. And the reason for that is that when the children are born, and I'm introducing a cultural part of what is done, in my culture, there is a naming ceremony for the child. And that naming ceremony involves all the village. Unless it's a huge town, most of the people will come. The mother will be with the child 8 days indoors in the room. And the family will be feeding the mother. The mother will go take a bath, come back. But basically, the mother is home. And the reason behind it, as I was told when I was growing up, is that when the child is born, unless the 8 days is passed, the child is half in the ancestral world, in the spirit world. The child is not fully here. And so the child is indoors with the mother. And when that 8 days happen, the relationship from the spirit world to this world is made. And so they will bring the child out in the morning, early morning. And that's when the whole village gathers. And the child will be given a name at that time and introduce that child to the community. That this is the addition to the community. This is this child's name, and it's going to take all of us to raise this child up. And from then on, that child's social life begins. An aunt can come and take that child. When the mother is going somewhere, the mother can leave the baby with the grandmother. If the mother needs to go somewhere, another person will sort of take care of the baby. So it's everybody's responsibility in caring for that baby until that baby grows up. And you can imagine if they are involved in that child's life at that early age, they are not going to abandon that child. So that child grows up knowing all the people around. And so when the mother is not there, there are other mothers who are there to take care of that child. So that child rearing is not lost or lonely. And I want to just introduce that the reason why the proverb is that everybody is involved in that child's life. And you make sure that child is going to grow up to be a viable member of that community. That's the importance behind that. So when the child is doing something and the mother is not there, there are other mothers to correct the child. And when the mother comes, the mother is not coming to take you to court. The mother is coming to your house to thank you for doing what you did. And I remember in my own life, I was a little stubborn kid and a little tomboy. You just leave me here and I'll be crawling all over up there to go just getting here. And so I got a lot of schooling. And sometimes they would just tell me, you come from such and such a family. You don't have to do that. If you do that, you are disgracing these people. And that will just stop me right there. Because you don't want to do something that will put stigma on your parents or the ancestors who have been a viable members in the community. So I will end this here so that we will have enough time to ask questions as we all introduce ourselves.
My name is Billy Viaton, and I have been come out of a nursing background with a variety of experience in that field. And for the past 11 years, I've been a psych therapist in the Counseling Center at St. Olaf College and have worked with students, many students, and some of their families. As I listen to you, Sister Rosina, I'm reminded of some of the practices that we have had in our country. Expectant mothers stayed in the hospital for 7 days long ago and had their child in, got the support from the medical staff and families could come and visit, but the mother was able to get acquainted with the child and also learn how to take care of that child before she went home. Babies were named before they left the hospital, but often that name was important in ceremonies such as baptism in many of the churches where the child was brought into a community of faith.
Yeah.
The children often grew up with extended families because there were aunts and uncles and other grandparents living around, so there could be help when it was needed, and support in raising the child. People lived in communities, in neighborhoods, where you knew your neighbor, and you could call on them to be helpful, and you could share common ethnic or cultural backgrounds. But let me tell you now how things are in this country. You know, we have evolved to such a higher state of functioning. Higher level of functioning, so we don't do those things anymore.
Yes, ma'am.
It's the American way. What was small and intimate and friendly has become big and bigger and biggest and separate and suspicious. And this equals success, I guess, because it's all for the common good. You see, we're a very progressive society. We're never satisfied with the status quo, which equals bad. Change is the higher good. The work ethic has always been strong in our country. In the past, it affected mainly men in the household because the roles were more defined. So the man was out working, by and large. There may have been some women too, but it was more men. And women often stayed home and had the role of caring for families. Now both men and women, both mother and father, are often in the workplace, many times because of financial need, also because of an interest in using the gifts that one has. But then what happens to the children? We are a society that does not really think about the needs of children on a societal level. They're placed in daycare, but we do not have a system of daycare that is adequate or enough or available enough to take care of many of these children. And individualism has always been a part of the American way. We do care about our children, but we care about them within our individual families. We care about how they dress, how they do in school. We encourage them to be in sports, music and art, but music and art are the first things that are cut from school budgets when there's financial decline. So the children are cared for individually within families, but you don't see a lot of extended families or neighborhoods caring for my child or the neighbor's child. We tend to stay within our own spheres, and even neighborhoods have broken down because we've been such a mobile society, and people have moved all over the country, and they continue to move, pick up here and there, and the dislocation of that and what that does to families and what that does to children. And with our new technology, we now have shortened the hospital stays for new moms to 24 hours. That's doing very well. I think in Minnesota, we, good senator here, they passed a law that said hospitals had to allow mothers, new mothers, to stay in the hospital for 48 hours. A real concession in our society. So then they're pushed back home, and oftentimes without family members, so they're on their own, have to take care of things and figure out what to do when the baby cries or is fussy or whatever. They really are left on their own a lot. And then there's the whole corporate world where corporations are downsizing. There have been takeovers. A lot of downsizing in corporations. One man in the village was telling me about a company that he was with. In a few years, it went from 10,000 to 2,500. Mm-hmm. So what does that do to families? Mm-hmm. What does that do to children? We don't ask those kind of questions. Also, there are many families on welfare, single mothers, single fathers, and families of low income that are barely making it. And we have a welfare system that penalizes people if they try to get ahead. There's some work at trying to change that. There's a lot of shame in our society. Recently in our Northfield newspaper, there was a story about a family that remained anonymous. They didn't want anybody to know who they were. Because both, the husband had lost his job, and then the wife lost her job. And they were a middle-class family. And they wanted people to know what it was like in losing the job and not having an income. They moved home to their parents that lived in a basement apartment. Nobody, they didn't want anybody to know. She goes to the grocery store at night, the article said. And because there's a 24-hour grocery store, and does her shopping for food with food stamps because she doesn't want people to know their situation. Somebody had said, made a remark about people on welfare are going to have to learn to shop at Target or Sears. And she said, we don't shop at Target or Sears. We go to secondhand stores. Mm-hmm. Or to Salvation Army. Mm-hmm. Goodwill. So what happens to the children in those situations? But it's kept secret. We have churches where we do a lot of work for missionaries and people out in that are doing work in other places, but sitting next to us may be a family who has a child in using mm-hmm. substances or alcoholic or maybe mentally ill or having some other problems, and we don't even know about it because it's kept secret. There's so much shame. Appearances are so important. So what happens to children? As a counselor, even at St. Olaf College, I dealt with a lot of students who came out of families that were divorced, remarriage, children learn how to adapt. They seem like they're getting along all right. But when you hear their stories, there's a lot of pain, a lot of loss, a lot of fear. There are families that the only emotion that is expressed is anger and resentment or expectations. And if you don't live up to the rules, there's a price to pay. There's abuse in families, verbal abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and it happens in our good families. It's not just people in inner city or in poverty, it happens all across. So I'm not very happy about what's happening to our children. Guess I'll stop there.
I'm John Marty, and I'm a state senator in Minnesota, and actually I think sort of brought on the discussion of this a little bit by naming one of my sessions, It Takes a Village to Raise a Child, not realizing we'd have somebody who knows the whole phrase and not knowing the whole phrase myself, but thinking that it was a very important way to summarize how we ought to invest in people as a society. And I think Billy's point out very well that our society is different than Ghana in terms of cultural understanding, and we very definitely have an individualistic belief. It is, when we talk about how kids are doing, first thing we think about how my kids are doing in school. Their classmates, oh yeah, that's nice. But we're concerned about our kids, our own family's kids. And that's very much the American perspective, and then yet I don't think most of us, I think the reason this It Takes a Village theme has caught on is because people do understand that there's a lot of wisdom in what your culture has known for a long time. We may be slowly catching up into understanding, but that comes at a time when American society has interesting views on what the public function is. And here when I talk about public function, it's partly government, but it's more than government. It's not just government, it's any other ways that we as a society deal with things outside of the family. And perhaps nonprofit groups, others who get involved. And the society's view right now of government is very much not anti-something about government, but just anti-government. And we want a limited government. We certainly don't want government intruding in important things like our families. And that is the predominant political culture we have here. And at a time when the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, comes into being, that's kind of clashing with our understanding of what the role of government should be. And I'd like to suggest that in trying to deal with the people who say a government shouldn't interfere with families, and it's the parents' job, and let our families take responsibility for themselves. I don't think those are necessarily in contrast. I mean, it's a little bit of a clash there, but certainly you don't have to have government interfere in a family that's functioning well. But we do need to recognize if our concern is, as it ought to be, for our own selfish sake as well as for the good of the children, that we make sure that children are raised in a healthy manner. And if I can raise my children perfectly well without any help from anyone else, well, nobody has any need to interfere. But frankly, Billy pointed out some of the more serious gaps. There's certainly physical abuse, mental, emotional, sexual abuse, neglect. What child gets all the love and all the nurturing and all the care and concern that we love every child to have? I don't know that any child gets everything we'd like them to have in terms of nurturing. In educational things, yes, there are some people who try and educate their children at home. But basically, we realize that nobody can do it all on their own. Certainly, some are total breakdown, total dysfunction, and if we don't intervene some way or another, the children die. I mean, they are killed by violence or neglect. And so we have an overwhelming consensus that somebody in the public has to step in those cases. And there's a growing consensus there's always been a consensus that in terms of education, the public has a role. And I think there's a growing understanding that children don't come with instruction manuals. It's not just the 24 or 48 hours in the hospital. And that was interesting in the debate. One male legislator who was supporting it said he went home and his wife told him if men were the ones who were delivering, carrying babies, we'd have a 48-day debate. And so he wasn't now in favor of it. Actually, he was a Northfield legislator. No, the other one, who may not have been supportive of it either. But we have a situation where we see a need, and I hope we see a growing need, for society to plug in the gaps in Minnesota and in many other states. Maybe it's a trend, and I hope if it's a fad or something, I hope it's not a fad that goes away quickly. Time and Newsweek have both done studies of early brain development, big cover stories in the last couple months. And we're recognizing earlier is better. The Head Start programs have been not universally, but almost universally popular. And in Minnesota, among other places, early childhood family education programs, where you recognize that even people who have the benefit of great educational opportunities and who have extended family nearby can still use help in learning how to raise children. And certainly the Holden Village setting is much closer to your childhood experience, where the village is there. I watched the little kids running all over the place in the dining hall tonight, little Christopher throwing a ball around, and he gets into trouble and somebody else steps in there and not scolding him, just helps him out and helps him on his way. And here's a very safe, caring, compassionate community, and I think that's what we'd all love to have happen everywhere. And the fact that we are bigger than that is, I'll agree with Billy, not a good situation, but not necessarily something you can control. With 250 million people in a country, you cannot avoid the fact that there are going to be some places with large communities, too large to be personal, too large to be safe and caring. And so we step in and we teach parenting and early childhood family education. We have to work to make sure all children have access to child care, to health care, to good housing and food and all the things that get involved in the welfare debates. This past year we had, just to show the importance of how you step in, a very moving testimony and a thing on homelessness. And this was in our early childhood education committee that deals with the preschool age kids and certain other non-traditional school types of efforts. There was I came in the middle of the testimony and had to piece together what they were talking about. There was a mother and her daughter sitting up there, and the mother was talking about how her daughter, she's trying to take over parenting from her daughter, her 13-year-old daughter, and it wasn't that way several years ago. And apparently when the daughter was 8 years old, the mother and she were living in a car for 6 or 7 months. They were totally homeless, and the mother was struggling to get along and dysfunctional in a number of ways and having a breakdown, and they were living in a car, and the mother couldn't see any other way out, so she tried to murder her daughter and commit suicide, and did not succeed, and was hospitalized in an institution for a couple months, and then her 8-year-old daughter stepped in, as people do try to, and they fill a gap, and so she was parenting for her mother for several years. 5 years later, they pulled themselves together, and the mother was now trying to resume the role as parent again and get the daughter to be able to be a child. And, you know, homelessness is an issue about children. Health care, child care, all those other things that, yes, I don't think anybody here wants to say, oh, we ought to do that, we ought to provide housing for everybody. We want the family to try and take care of it. But we have to recognize, even in healthy, mentally and physically and emotionally healthy families with sufficient resources, there's a need for the village to step in. And in cases where it's not so healthy, there may be need for dramatic intervention. So we can live with our individualism that we have. We don't have much choice as where we are, but we can also recognize the wisdom we take from other cultures and hope we move forward.
Okay, we've had the issues lifted up and we've heard some comments. What responses do you have? Ideas?
I was ready for the answers.
Yeah.
That's your job.
I guess one of the questions I have is, you know, John mentions Holden, and Holden is not, this setting is not very typical, but mm-hmm. I guess the question I have is, where is the Christian church in relationship in this culture? What models have we provided which can provide, you know, some different paradigms to look at, some different examples? And I was a member of Intentional Christian Community for 15 years in South Georgia, and very much you had the village kind of notion there, and I'm just wondering what people's experiences here are in how kids are raised in their own faith setting, and whether or not the church is providing some adequate models, or whether the church really ends up reflecting a lot of the culture's individualism.
Well, since the church is the people, the church does reflect the people's commitment. So it's not the church, something out there, is responsibility to provide this. It's each member of each church to do it. And unfortunately, I think they quite often, at least in our situation, they want to hire a youth person to take care of all the ills that they're unwilling to address and commit time and resources to. So I don't know that it's the church's, quote, responsibility to do it. It's the members.
I'll suggest that, well, I don't know if it's Koinonia or where in Georgia, but that the church does have some models. I mean, I think we can be proud to say Holden has a nice model. And again, seeing some family walk down the hillside, the parents holding hands with the two little kids who were skipping and hopping along. And I found out then that, oh no, that wasn't, talked to the dad today and found it wasn't the dad, it was somebody else. And people, it is a very much a good model we can be proud of. Somehow to replicate that elsewhere would certainly help let society at large see it. And I'm not sure that the church, whether we mean the individual members of the church or the church bodies themselves, have to necessarily do it all. I mean, there's a reason they do hire church youth people, and that's because they can't find somebody to fill in, to volunteer and do all the work, so it's easier at some point to hire somebody. But rather than trying to fill all the gaps, certainly lots of churches have good preschool and early childhood programs. Some of them do some low-income works, maybe not enough, but one of the things I'd say the churches are lacking is the role of advocacy and arguing why we ought to change, why we as a society have a responsibility. And yes, hold up the models here, why can't we do more of this, and then advocate for public response, whether through government or nonprofits or whatever, to fill in those gaps.
You know, sometimes I think that we know what to do, but we just don't want to do it. And I suppose that would be called sloth.
Can I also mention that there are churches that do teach schools and private schools, and I guess I'm a homeschooled parent, and large organizations that keep those homeschooled children together. So I guess when you were talking, I kind of, my little vibes went as to where you put that homeschool as a bad, evil thing, or were you just lumping it together as, did I misinterpret what you were saying? I guess for my feelings right now.
Sure. No. Okay.
When I say, you know, mental abuse and neglect and
And what I was trying to say in terms of, by the way, just so this is clear, aside from homeschooling is an issue, but that all of us, even those of us who feel we're raising our kids the right way, we can't solve all the needs.
No.
And frankly, most of us, you're one of those who has chosen to do something that's very time-consuming, very difficult to do. Most of us have made a decision to have society do much of the formal education. I don't think anybody in this room is the sort who says, okay, well, you send them off to school, that's their job, I don't have to have anything to do with it. I think we all recognize as parents a responsibility to do it. Homeschooling, as one who has no objection to it, I'd have a concern about making sure that kids have enough social interaction and certain other things, which I guess I think is a very legitimate concern, but again, not knowing any one situation, I've seen some kids who are homeschooled who do very well and I think fit in well to society. I wouldn't encourage it widespread among a lot of people because it is very difficult. My feeling about homeschool or private school is if people want to do it and commit the time and money and effort to doing it, more power to them. As a public official, I see my job is to make sure we have a good public school system available to everyone. In terms of what I was talking about there was to say the problems, some families are dysfunctional and kids die as a result, or kids wither in many ways. But even those who don't have dysfunctional families, we can't do it all, and maybe in very limited circumstances we can do almost all.
And deciding what's dysfunctional and what the state allows to have happen.
Well, I think you have a different role when there's some evidence of child abuse or something. Wenatchee, Washington, the news has been national for years about what's happening or didn't happen here. But certainly we ought to go out of our way when there's concerns about something like that to step in. How intrusive should the public be into a private setting in terms of, well, how exactly should you raise your children? What's the best way to raise your kids? I think most of us would be fairly leery of government telling us exactly how to do that.
I think that's called fear.
Pardon?
I think that's called fear.
Fear of what?
On the basic level of what's the government going to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Same reason I think our Constitution prohibits the government from providing the religious instruction to our mm-hmm. children, because we're scared of, we've seen what governments do.
Yeah, you've been having your hands up for a while.
The whole question about what churches are doing, I think there's a lot of experimenting going on mm-hmm. in churches and how to look at things. The Search Institute in Minneapolis, which is at least somewhat church-related in its roots, has done some real good studies, I think, on what are the strengths, what are the characteristics that are sort of protective for children in giving them what they need, and I think it's done a good job. I don't know if that's pretty national, the publicity about the Search Institute, community strength thing. And I know we just had a really exciting synod up in northeastern Minnesota, which was half business and half education in the same synod, and it was a Search Institute call to coming and talking about intergenerational mm-hmm. things for in congregations. And I think that's one of the more exciting things to think about, because I think it gives to everybody. I think we're getting into periods where people who are early, young, dynamic, retired people are looking for something beyond moving away and being all by themselves and being totally involved in their own entertainment and maybe wanting to be part of the community. And I think intergenerational things within the church look differently at how Sunday school is done, confirmation, you know, all these things, and maybe make it something that involves more the church family and more youth work that involves, you know, adults, with the youth worker being the person who helps pull those groups together and train them. But I think there's some, and individual congregations are doing pieces of it, you know.
It's, okay, we have two hands up here, you and then I'll bring the day.
I had a question for you, but...
okay.
First thing I wanted to say is we have a non-denominational thing in King County, where Seattle is, to get new mothers together in their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I was involved in that when I had my first son. That was a really good thing, because you do start a community that way, mm-hmm. and your neighbors, you know. Mm-hmm. I can drop my child off with any one of 8 or 10 other mothers now, mm-hmm. and they can do the same for me, and we can get together and complain about the same things. Toilet training was the latest.
anyway, this is all sponsored that. Who developed that?
It's called the Program for Early Parent Support, and it's a King County nonprofit. And it was originally intended to stop child abuse, because isolation is a heavy factor mm-hmm. in child abuse. Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you about issues of isolation versus conflict with being in a small community mm-hmm. in Guinean culture. I know that every mother in my mother's group mm-hmm. was from another state. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one with my mother in town. Mm-hmm. And they all said, oh gosh, I wish my mother in town. I wish my mother, oh, you're so lucky. Well, why aren't they at home with their mothers? They want to be individual, they want to fulfill their own destiny. Mm-hmm. It's the American way. I mm-hmm. want to do the same thing too, and I chafe at my mother sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I wonder where that conflict comes in Guinean society. I know, do people want to move out of these constricted little communities?
Well,
there's a conflict between wanting to do your own thing uh-huh. and having control.
But the difference here is that when you move, you want to do your own thing. When you go and sort of plant yourself there in isolation.
Yeah.
My culture, when you move from where you are, you go to another community. They always say that the hen will step on the chick, but it never kills it. The hen. You know a hen? Chick. A hen. The mother hen. Okay, the mother hen will step on the chick's neck, mm-hmm. but it will never kill it. Oh. The chick will go, chick, 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 and the mother takes off the food, the chick gets up. But here, it's very different. So you see, conflict doesn't kill you. It's something that is not happening right. that you need to straighten it out. But if you don't do that, and you sort of take it that because this has happened, the relationship is gone, it's going to follow you wherever you go. So you learn to, you know, deal with issues. And sometimes I get mad with my mother, but she's still my mother. I'm not going to throw her away. When I'm, you know, when she's mad, I'm mad. We just sort of say, you know, this time I'm grown, I'm old. You can't just tell me what to do again. I'll just get mad, walk out. The next minute I'll have to go in and say, Mom, I'm sorry. You see, so there is always somebody who is going to be a mother for you, no matter what tribe. All you need, and to tell you the truth here, when I came here, knowing that I'm coming to a different culture, the community asked a black couple here that since I was going to be the only one here, they've been to Africa before, they said she may need somebody here. And so they arranged for Mr. and Mrs. Wayne before I even came here. And once I came and they introduced them to me, now I'm more a daughter in the family than the children in the family. Because I'm always with them. I'm always, when the husband got heart attack, I was in the hospital before the rest got there. I put myself in the family, and now I am accepted as one of them. They are from Colombia. But I made it a point because that's my background. I need a mother. Not that I cannot live my life, but I need an elder. Well, who I can bounce things off, you know? How do I do it? Yes, ask for wisdom. Okay, brother. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
I was just going to bounce off what you were saying about the family effort. And there's two things, really. I don't know if Rich Melheim and the family, Total Family Sunday School, and is that familiar to anybody here? Right now, our congregation will be one of 200 congregation test congregations in the across the whole country, and the training for it's in Stillwater, Minnesota, at the church that Rich Melheim served, Trinity Lutheran, I think it is in Stillwater, and the idea of Total Family Sunday School is exactly that. It brings small groups of family units together. I think it's about maybe about 8 total in a unit, but there is no grading. All the people will be family units that are bound together for a year commitment on Sunday morning. Presentations will be done by what they call master teachers who will do presentations at large group with a lot of materials and a lot of exciting things that they'll have at their fingertips to put on the lessons. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be small group orientated, and the small group will include helping families to take home, you know, the lessons, take home the principles that are being taught, I suppose. How do you get prayer in the home? Mm-hmm. But the whole family is there. The requirement is the whole family is there. Of course, not every family will want to participate that way, so there will be places where there will be 2 or 3 kids from where the parents don't come will be added to other family groups. Mm-hmm. But everything will be family group orientated. It's an experiment which the ELCA and Missouri Synod is very much behind. They're going on the internet and the website, and all the congregations that are involved on a weekly basis are going to feed their experiences into the internet, into the website, which anybody could get, telling this, you know, what worked, what didn't work, what ideas they have for the future. And it's kind of an exciting project, and it's an effort I see to bring the, you know, the whole family together in the religious context for a Sunday morning education. Our Sunday school was, we have wonderful teachers and really dedicated people, But our attendance is going down because there are so many other priorities for families on Sunday morning. And this has been a little bit tried a couple of years now in a few congregations, and it actually makes people want to be there. Mm-hmm. And from what they've been experiencing, it really, those groups really draw together as a very supportive mm-hmm. group for the families that are involved. Mm-hmm. It's a very exciting concept, I think.
I think it's good, though. But what happened to those who do not belong to faith community?
Yeah, you try to draw them in. And newcomers, you know, you try to make it an open place. Always, every group will have openings in it. There will always be a welcoming mm-hmm. format in the group. And I don't know, I haven't had the training, and I'm not real sure.
No, I'm just, you know, I'm just supporting what you say. We hear pockets of church doing something. And a village is not just your faith community.
That's right.
A village is a combination okay. of other people living there, and that's why I'm asking that, yes, what happens to...
The next dimension mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. is, or one of the dimensions of that is community involvement, so that each one of these family groups, part of, I think every other week is the presentation, a master presentation, and then they have several hours to work. And part of what they work on is how do they reach into the community?
Oh,
how do they involve themselves? How does this little group involve mm-hmm. themselves in some kind of either community outside the congregation mm-hmm. or in the worship life of the congregation? So they become either involved in the worship life for that particular month mm-hmm. or going out into the community. One other thing, that's one thing that kind mm-hmm. of bounced off what you're saying. It's also Augsburg Family and Youth. Yeah, Ray McKeever is very big in this. He was at a conference for Child in Our Hands workshop, which is in Minneapolis, and I was, we were at that one as well. Marking the progress of children all the way to 18 years of age with markers that you celebrate with the family in the home.
Mm-hmm.
The community goes to the home and celebrates with the family.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's every 2 years or 3 years as a marker. That's a whole other program that we're also instituting in our church. We also have been involved in a program for the last 10 years called Mentoring the Public Schools. We it actually began in our church, and now it's spread to the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
We've got about 150 adults that go into the public schools and meet with the children that are having problems.
Mm-hmm.
These adults, my wife is one, she's been going to the alternate school, meeting mm-hmm. with some of the high school kids who have been having a lot of problems, and is trying to provide some support and an adult that will listen to what's going on in the child's life. So that's another thing we've been very active in, and it really, it's just mushroomed.
Sounds like a good idea, a real wonderful thing. And the other thing I haven't heard anybody say is, I heard some time ago about the elderly people, the nursing home people, now some are being taken to hospital where the children are very sick and sometimes do not have the family there, and they are now sort of holding the babies and playing with them. And Bellevue in New York is doing that. I did my chaplaincy there. And it's giving a whole life to the old people as well as to the children.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, I was saying to them, it's something that is natural. Why is it that it's so surprising that the people are now learning it?
Mm-hmm.
Children that are loved and held and always around, they grow up feeling very secure of themselves. And they sort of have this love that grows with them. And the children that are abandoned all the time, not, you know, that abandoned gone, but you put them in a crib or whatever. And sometimes they will cry, and the mother is so busy, and they put the feeding tube, and then they still go. They think the whole world is not safe. When somebody, and they grow up with it. And so having that early stage with these elderly people having a good time with these children. They are producing, you know, real confidence in themselves mm-hmm. as they are maturing. Mm-hmm. And that's what the kind of thing I'm just looking for. That community, there are so many old people that we don't know what to do with them. We put them in their own little safe corner. Why don't we integrate those people who have really lived the life and still have some life in them, that they could really be able to play and cuddle these children? How can we bring them together? That's what we do at home.
I wanted to say that I think it's your comment earlier about how churches are experimenting, and we've heard many wonderful things. I think it's beyond the churches and your community. Yeah, the churches are part of it. Everyone else fills a gap. Your example of the seniors and the kids in the intensive care, mm-hmm. There's a nursing home in Minneapolis, or used to be one, that is next door to a mm-hmm. child care center, Oak and Acorn. I thought it was a beautiful name. And the mother, the elderly people just rock the kids. Most of them are frail enough they can't do much, but they just rock the kids for a couple hours a day. Wonderful thing. But again, not only the creative things we're hearing about the churches, but King County's program you were talking about. I want to make two comments. One about the concern about moved away from the community you're in. Well, like here at Holden, nobody, I don't think anybody in this village is a native Holden villager. We're all here, and you adopt, and you're being an adoptive mm-hmm. grandparent or family mm-hmm. member in a sense, and helping raise them. That works very well, and we have to find ways to branch it out elsewhere. And I know Minnesota had a program, it's now a national program, similar to the King County Parent, their early mother support group, and what you were saying, the original purpose was to prevent child abuse. I remember a national commentator had written an article about this program and talked about how a group of eight mothers sitting around and talking about it. And the day this writer was there, one of the women was saying she just couldn't figure out what to do. No matter how hard she spanked her eight-month-old son, he kept wailing his pants. And the other parents were all, the mothers were horrified. No, you don't understand. The eight-month-old is not able to be toilet trained yet. And if we want to see what causes abuse, I mean, it may be a very loving parent who just doesn't have a clue. And again, that's why your sense, yeah, pulling away the isolation and having mothers together can help a lot. But again, that's a nonprofit program. There are government initiatives, there are church initiatives. And that's where we create the village and how we get that so every village has the village doing this and not one program in Stillwater and one program in Seattle and one somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. But there's still a need for a basic government service. I know when I gave birth 3 years ago, I had a doula who said, oh, I just helped out a heroin addict who every, between all of them crashes, had to go out and smoke cigarettes. And, you know, she was a public health doula, and she was sent, you know, she was sent to visit this new mother shortly after she gave birth. She had a 4-pound baby, followed her home to a flop house. You know, this kind of stuff, these kind of people give birth too and mm-hmm. raise families. You know, your average church isn't going to, you know, it's very hard to reach out to these people short of going to public school. Mm-hmm. Why wait 5 years? You got to have a public health person go out. That's the purpose of government, you know. I
agree. I said government, nonprofit,
yeah,
churches, you know, everyone. You're right, we have to.
You can reach out, but sometimes mm-hmm. you're not going to get a heroin addict who just gave birth to a 4-pound baby. You know, you've got to have someone who says, listen, it's against the law for me not to follow you home and make sure you're taking care of this baby. You know, it's not, I'm not, you know, they'll say you're bothering me, but you got to have someone make sure that that child isn't neglected.
I agree.
And there is another thing coming from a different part of the world I notice here is that, and I ask those questions, so don't think I'm just asking you, I'm always asking those questions. There are people who seems to have been dropped from the sky in this society. Sometimes I see those people and I say, wasn't anybody pregnant? Mm-hmm. Didn't somebody breastfeed or, you know, bought diaper? Mm-hmm. they seem like they don't have any roots. They just drop from the sky. And I haven't seen that happening anywhere, that people drop from the sky. Everybody has somebody who gave birth to somebody and somebody gave birth to somebody. And so when you have, for example, a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old who has given birth and do not have anywhere to go, it baffles me.
Where's their mother?
Where's the mother?
And exactly what happened. Yeah, where are the parents? Did this girl just drop from the sky? And I confronted one in New York, said, this is what where the abuses come. And from a different world, you see, I can watch some things that maybe people have become so used to it, and they've seen it and seen it and seen it, so it's not new. But with a new eyes, I will stop and ask questions. I was coming from school very late in the evening, about 11 o'clock in the night, and I heard a cry from a far away as I was approaching 28th Street to the convent. And as I was getting closer, I saw a little boy standing there closer to the subway crying. And as I got closer, I realized he was about 3.5 to 4 years old. And there was the mother about, 10 yards away with another baby in a cart and standing there talking to a friend. And I look at that child and the child was ready to fall asleep on his face. So I sort of, bent down and started coaxing that child to stop crying. Because he's been crying for a long time, I walk all the way to meet that child. And so I said, wait, mama is coming to take you home. Don't cry, it's all right. And then the mother screams from where she was at the boy. And I stopped and I looked at her and I said, this boy ought to be in bed. You have another one in this carriage. And you are standing here talking and you are screaming at the boy. And she turned angry, looking at me and said, if I don't straighten him now, he's going to kill you before you know it. I said, if this boy is going to kill anybody, it's you. You are his problem. I said, you know that? You are his problem. So if this boy is going to kill anybody, it's going to be you, not me. He will kill you first before the gun reach me, because you are his problem. This boy should be in bed. Here you are. You are a kid yourself. You have two kids, and you are still standing in the street. There were people standing there before I got there. And she realized I mean business. I was just going to go away, because that child doesn't belong to that girl alone. That child belongs to me too. And if that child doesn't grow up well, it will affect me too. I live here. I'm going to suffer. And she realized I mean business. I'm not just going to back off and let her just, speak harshly and go off. And I said, you were a kid raising kids. Where's your mother? You ought to be in bed too. I was just so furious. And so she took off. She took off from the friend and started dragging the boy. And I said, you better be careful. He may be the president. You never know. And so I just turned. And as I turned, a group of people were standing there and they moved closer to me and said, thank you. You could be the only one to do this. We've watched this woman. This kid has been crying for hours. Why didn't anybody say anything to that girl? They were afraid what she might do. Yes, brother.
We have no basis to judge a value on. How do I know that I can tell her what's right or wrong? I have no heritage, no basis that says I have a set of values that says, yes, this child should be in bed. I have none of that.
There's how come?
That says that I can, that what I have...
I mean, how come? How come you don't?
I haven't had it since my growing up in my family. I've lived behind the wall of my neighborhood. We don't talk. That's the way I was raised. I I can walk on the street and say, you know, that's their business. I have nothing that says for 9 centuries my family has always raised children this way, that we go to bed at this time because it's healthy mm-hmm. for the child. There's nothing that pulls me to the people I walk past the street and say, you know what, for 9 centuries we've been doing it this way and it works, see. I have nothing that says that. I have my observations saying, well, I've taken a few classes here and it says it's really healthy this way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not enough to confront someone on the street.
I think rather though, I don't know what you are going to say, but I want to say something about that. I think the love in your heart says a lot when you see something that is not right. Nobody may teach you how to do it, but there's something inside you, and I call that God spirit. It's inside you that decide when you see something really wrong, you know it in your head, and nobody would have told you that. So I think that basis also should be the same way, and I can sympathize with you living in a culture where somebody is going to take you to court for poking your nose into their business, that you won't do it. But when that comes, I really don't care. And that's me. That's my personality. She could have taken the gun and shoot me, but I would have said what I said. And she wasn't the only one I've confronted that way. Because that's my nature. And I said, I was born one day, I'll die one day. So I'm not afraid. I really am not. When I go in the faith of God. You kill me today, you won't get me tomorrow to kill. I'm gone. Okay. You were saying something when I said...
Did you want to
respond?
No.
I just had one other thing to that, and I've seen that sort of thing in a supermarket where the mother is yelling at this poor kid, and the kid is just... So, I mean, you can't know always all the situation going up to it, but the kid needs somebody to give him a hug rather than to be yelled at. Who taught you that, you stupid something or another? And maybe you did, parent. But I guess the idea of whose values are we teaching what and what right do I have to do it, I guess I think that's where we're talking about this village issue. Should the village step in there? And I think, yes, very definitely the village should. Certainly there's some areas that are, well, where we draw the line is a gray area, certainly. But we've already made the decision. If you see some parent locking their kid in a room, the horror stories where people lock their kids in the closet for years, we've said that's not okay. We're going to go in and we're going to arrest the parents. We're going to take the kid out of the house permanently because of that. We've made the decision that it's appropriate for us to step in with our societal values in some cases. Certainly there's some, well, do you intervene here or not? There's always going to be the gray line, and you and I weren't there, and how she did, and how each one of us may react differently. Mm-hmm. But I think, I guess I wish... I'm not Sister Rosina.
No,
I wish
different.
I wish more of us were really more like her. But I do think there is a lot to be said for when you see, and I like the way you phrase that, about in your heart, there's something about us that tells us that something's unhealthy and something's wrong. And it's always going to be touchy when you intervene on somebody else's turf in a very personal way. But I think too many times, it's a famous case from 30 years ago where everybody stood by and you know, watched the murder person. And we know that's wrong. And afterwards, how could we do that as a society? And again, that's a clear-cut case, and there's some gray, fuzzy things, but I do think we've got to step in.
But you speak with such conviction and authority.
I do.
You do.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a difference, mm-hmm. that stops people, even though they respond where she, you know, responded to you mm-hmm. negatively at first. Mm-hmm. There is a sense of something breaks through and you're heard.
I do it with love.
Yes, love. Of course.
The love is there, but I say it in a way that I think you will hear that this is the way it's supposed to be.
And I think in our society, we have learned to not to get involved, not to mind. It's part of that. Mm-hmm. We take care of ourselves. We don't get involved in other people's business.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to trace that back to the beginning of how that attitude started?
Yeah.
Well, for the purposes of taping and on the hour, I'm going to ask that we formally close
and then
the end of the forum. But invite the conversation to continue, and we're all captured here by this village, so it can continue tomorrow and the next day and as long as you're here. And please do that.
I want answers tonight.
Really has the answer to that.
He asks God to give him patience too right now. Yeah.
Thank you for your comments. They're good.
This I think this happens in our families too, where we sometimes have difficulty confronting a family member or our children, or for fear of somehow tipping the balance or making them angry or it not being the right thing.
You know, there's this thing inside of me that says, well, you know, we can articulate the problems all the time. They're so easy to articulate problems, but do we ever stop and think, well, now, how did this get started? You know, and then we start tracing our, you know, like we do something, we try to retrace our steps.
Yeah.
And if we could probably get to that root cause, and
fix it,
and then we could start from there. Because it takes a long time to get up here. Hey,
I put the other dish on the table.
Could it have been, I mean, the fact that we are a nation of immigrants, that people who came here, the so-called individualism that we've had, that made people choose to come here?
I think you're right. Because we didn't want to be buckled down by rules and regulations and had to think a certain way and, and live a certain way that became in small groups. And that's what you did. You had your own little subculture, and that's the way things were handed down.
But even that is broken down. Even when I used to hear that Brooklyn was Italian area. There were some areas that were, you know, Jewish community. Even all that is broken down. And now you see what, for me, living in here and working every day, and I lived in New York City for 14 years. That's another part of it. And I mean, if I sit here to tell you all I've done, it will fill this room. And sometimes I feel, I just say that, you know, people will say to me, you were lucky you didn't grow up here, you'll be dead. I said, yeah, then I won't be here to do it. But since I'm still here, I'm going to do it. Because sometimes it takes somebody, and I keep saying that, we still have the prophets among us who can do that. You do the hard thing nobody else wants to do, because they don't want to feel bad. They don't want people to say something bad against them. But I really, for God's sake, I don't care. I would do it if it's the right thing. And I've stopped a woman right in her track with a son, walking in the street, and the kid did something, and then she turned and she used this language: you ain't going to be nobody just like your dad. And I stopped both of them. I put my hand right there, and I said, wait a minute. And I said, did you hear what you said to the kid? I said, would you blame this child if this child doesn't become anybody? I said, the mouth you use every day, you don't know the power in your mouth. And what you are saying to this child is going to happen if you don't change your attitude and do something different. And she stood there and she was shocked. She stared at me that somebody neutral who doesn't know her will stop her and say something like that to her in the street. And then she moved on. But I did. You know, you wouldn't say something that I know that I need to respond and turn my back for it. I wouldn't do it. I will say it. You can insult me, fine. But I'll let you know that what you did is not right. To tell a child, you ain't going to be nobody just like your father. You are cursing that child before that child gets a chance. And I've seen it over and over and over. But we forget that God gave us this power in our hands. And I sometimes wonder if Jesus really thought about this, leaving that power in our hands, saying that when you bind on earth, it's going to be bound in heaven. And when you lose it here, it's going to be loose in heaven. You are all Christians. Think about it.
The problem with Christianity is it's too invitational.
Yes, sir.
Well, you were the one that said we know what we know what we should do, but we don't do it.
That's right.
I think so.
The power of that is that I think a lot of kids, one thing said like that in their presence can be a very powerful thing. You know, I've heard kids say that just one person expresses faith in them, and that can sometimes be the powerful thing that can cancel things they've heard from other people. So that's one thing I think to remember why it's worth doing that.
Yeah.
No matter what, how unhopeful you may feel about changing the parents. And I guess the other thing is, I think the discussion that's now happening in our society maybe pushes us to try to practice some of that. I know one day I was driving down the hill at home, and there were some kids throwing things at cars, and I just put on my brakes like this, and I backed up of the hill. I was so, because I'd just been hearing for so long, no one stops. And I just decided to stop and say, what are you doing? And, you know, the shock value is worthless.
Well, I think there's another piece to it. There's an honesty that they experience in that encounter. And somebody cares, because maybe
but
they
it
could
is like something you have to practice, because we I think we've kind of gotten away from it.
Well, we're afraid. We're really afraid for so many
It's just
reasons.
Fear.
I think some of that too is working with children and knowing that I have an insurance policy in my homeowner's policy that when I go out and teach children, I can't be sued and I can't lose everything because I may have said something that may have offended the parents. It was never anything said to the child to put them down or to say a kind word to them, a misinterpretation. And I think that there's some fear in that, whether it's a large fear or a small fear.
Yeah, it's
fear
true.
Fear it evolves. Somebody's
going to
come back
at you. It's the society, you know, that's on all this we are saying. But unless the parents come to some understanding and start backing, you know, sort of the teachers and the people who are trying to make differences, it's not going to happen, because you need all the help you can take. I have worked in an area, you know, for a long time, so I really know what I'm talking. I've been working with children, and some of them are in college now. I worked in Harlem, St. Philip's Church, for almost 10 years. And when I got there the first time, the kids, you know, when I say something, they look at me like, what is this woman from Africa, you know, doing, you know, what does she want from here? And by the time I spent 3 months with them, the priest looked at me and said, what do you have in your veil? It really is like magnet. You catch these kids. And if you look at this village, you see how many kids relate to me when I walk around. It's just everywhere I go. Children will just, you know, my fingers are all, you know, always being held on. The kids started to relate to me. I would be coming and they would be running from their mother's hands. And they will come meet me, and I will just walk with them, and we will be having a good time, just, you know, doing things, singing. And there was one particular boy, I would have loved to hang him on a tree. He was so, so mean and so bad. And And I prayed. You know, I pray a lot for those children when I do my meditations. And that boy, I prayed and prayed and prayed until God came through my prayer to tell me what to do with that kid. Because it was so awful that that child will, you know, throw temper tantrum, disturb all the other kids, and there were about 45 to 50 kids in the Sunday school. And so what came through was to, you need to lift this kid up. And I went to Sunday school that morning and I said, I'm going to make you a teacher. I'm going to make you a teacher. And you know, being a teacher, you have to behave. Or the other kids won't be, you know, won't respond to you when you say anything. And so I gave him a little chair by my side and I said, now you are a teacher with me, co-teachers. We are going to teach. And you know, from that time on, that little kid started behaving because he wanted the other kids to shut up. And so he would sit and shut up. And so every time I'm leaving the room, I'll say to him, you watch them. Anybody who make noise here, tell me when I come in. Little by little, the mother started asking me, what have you been doing with the boy? And I said, well, you know, I'm trying to use all avenues. The mother is a scout teacher. And one day the mother came to church and said, the boy was singing a song you taught him because he heard it on the radio. And the song is, oh, be careful, little mouth, what you say. Oh, be careful, little mouth, what you say. For the Father up above is looking down below. Oh, be careful, little mouth, what you say. And I teach kids with their parts so that they can learn their eyes, their nose. And he loves to sing it. He's taller than me now. He's now tall and he's just 16. When I was ordained, it was a snowstorm that day. He was the only kid that came to that ordination. The mother said, he got up in the morning and he said, I have to go to Sister Rosina's ordination. The mother couldn't just get him off and he came. He's finished high school now last year. So he's gone off now this year. But there is no time that boy wouldn't ask about my whereabouts. Because I took time and made a difference in that boy. And for the first 3 months, I wanted to hang that boy on a tree. If I have my own way.
I was going to say, since we probably should close, but mm-hmm. I was going to say that your stories of how you've intervened in sometimes one sentence to a stranger and sometimes mm-hmm. intensely in one life, since we're supposed to hype books in the bookstore that they've ordered a number of. This one, I only saw one copy of it down there, and it's a children's book, but the best Christmas pageant ever.
Oh yeah.
And I'm sure maybe that, it reminds me of the kids who are at risk, and nobody cares about them. They just run wild and mm-hmm. never had the love and attention, and all of a sudden, through luck or happenstance or whatever, they're in positions of important positions, and all of a sudden, wow, they turn out to use the things that kids have in them to turn out right. And, anyway, I thought that was a...
Okay.
You are a wonderful person who can tell us wonderful stories like this.
Okay, thank you all for coming. So please buy the books. And here you are.